We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Aikman is intercepted by Sam Mills.
Oh! Steve Smith is going to go all the way. Panthers win in overtime.
Newton steps up, throws for the end zone. Olsen, touchdown.
Touchdown by Moore. And in the foot race, McCaffrey to the end zone.
Keep pounding on three. 1, 2, 3.
Keep pounding.
Welcome back to another episode of The Roar, brought to you by Blue Wire. I'm your host, Billy Marshall. After taking a week off, I'm back with my guy, Mr. John Ellis, who has done a phenomenal job in my absence. And we'll get to all of the reports in a minute. But John, what's up, man?
Welcome back, world traveler. Good to see you. And I appreciated the text from you that I believe you were funneling something, some type of beverage, and eating lobster. And while you were doing all of that and basking in the sun, I was standing on the field at Wofford College, which is essentially a swamp and sauna in one, watching Matt Rhule's third-year Panthers trying to get things rolling. Definitely, it's a long time coming, you and I back together here, and we got a lot to get to, man. Good to have you back.
Yeah, for sure. I know we had the same format last year while I took a same hiatus. Obviously, that one went a little long because I did unfortunately catch COVID last year during my trip. Right. But this year, stayed healthy for all 7 days. There was no requirement to take a COVID test on the way back. And I'm back home and still healthy. So that's always a positive sign. But
that's good.
As we kind of transferred this discussion into the professional football team that we cover, it's been a little, it's been obviously great to follow your coverage. I think you've presented a ton of really nice information and transparency what the team is kind of going through and, how you kind of see the practices being organized.
Thanks,
Bob. Why don't you just take me through, some of the kind of updates you have since your last episode?
Yeah, absolutely. And want to also thank our listening audience and Blue Wire, especially for facilitating our forum here. What we've done this week, and Billy, you and I kind of workshopped how we would handle training camp coverage. And it was a little bit like last year, just sort of more of a daily episode. And I think we'll try to do some more of that throughout parts of seasons that require it, because it's good to give people sort of a daily dose of what's happening. And it's been kind of refreshing for me, because just on a personal level, when I go to camp, and reporters, you see like Ellis Williams, Joe Person, everybody's got their own way of doing the work. It's about an hour and a half practice. So you only have so much time to capture information. And I found, and by the way, just let me just start this by saying, Billy, if you don't know this, the whole world does by now, the team, and I get it, things happen. The team has prohibited fans now, not just, people in the media like, myself and others, but fans, if you're walking around, if your phone is out and it looks like you're filming something during the course of actual 11-on-11, 7-on-7s, non-stretch type of drills, they're going to ask you to put the phone away. And if you don't, they'll take it away. So you're seeing much less in terms of video coverage online. And for the media, you get a small window you can film in. So I've kind of looked at that and said, move away from, let me try to capture every snapshot of what's going on, and put the phone on silent for about an hour and just take some notes. So in the great tradition of Matt Rhule, who loves a good note taker, your boy John here got his steno pad, and then I upgraded to a bigger notebook and actually got some charts out and tried to chart this practice as if I was a part of the staff. Now, I'm not, and I wouldn't have the qualifications to do that, but from day one, I came in first day of last week, and as we mentioned on the first episode of our weekly digest here on the podcast, it was a good opportunity to get a sense of how this team looked at in pads. Because, Billy, you know, until they're in pads, that's sort of the first gate you crossed in really evaluating what you've got. OTAs are there for install, getting to know you, communication, you know, logistics. And once you get into the padded portion of training camp, you really get a sense of, okay, you can go make some collisions here. You can put together some block schemes in the run game. The run game is really where you get to see it, Billy, I think a lot in terms of the blocking. And then you also get a chance to evaluate the quarterbacks, which is a big deal right now. And as we talked about, and we're going to continue to talk about this in a very nuanced way, we're not going to hot take it, and we're also not going to ignore it. When we started this week in pads, Matt Rhule was still working both of the top two quarterbacks, which would be Baker Mayfield, Sam Darnold, on an equal pitch count with the ones. So the understanding was, and this is comments Matt made during the week, that there would be a practice on Friday and Saturday, which was yesterday, today, and there could be some changes to everybody's sort of role there. Well, just a quick update as we flash forward to today, I can tell you that Darnold took at least 28 pass attempts, and Mayfield, I believe, was at like 21. So it's clear right now that Sam Darnold is still getting, and this is with ones and twos combined, they're still splitting time. As we talk to you on Saturday, August the 6th, at the number one quarterback spot, Rhule also said today, Billy, and I'm paraphrasing, but this is from Ellis Williams, and I passed it along to our listeners here, that Matt Rhule was not going to make any decisions on starters until the New England preseason game, which is 13 days from today. So, obviously, everybody's got an opinion on this. I'd love to get yours at some point in the show. But as we go back and look throughout the week, some things that I can just give you on a high level as we get started here, and then we can go more detail-based. I did mention the fact that every year you go to camp, you kind of see an oh-shit moment. Like, okay, that right there does not look like it's something that's going to hold up by October. Or that quarterback, boy, those are some throws that don't belong in the NFL. You see some things occasionally like that really make you concerned that, okay, if this is a guy that's at least first or second string, I'm not sure how things are going to go if he's asked to be a full-time player. Cam Irving was the prime example of this last year. From day one, sitting there with Stanley McClover on the hill and looking at how badly he was overmatched by Brian Burns on every level, power to speed, speed to power, bull rush. It was going to be an uphill battle because he was penciled in as the starter, as you remember, Cam Irving. You can remember the Will Greer camp. I chronicled that. It was very bad. He was a rookie, but so is Matt Corral. Matt has not been very bad. He hasn't been very available and active. That's not his fault, because these top two quarterbacks are getting most of the reps, but he's been on the field first. His mechanics look great. He stays late. He works with guys like Higgins, and I saw him working yesterday with CJ Saunders, who's had a very good camp. So, yeah, those are some of the high-level views. And the practice itself, I think you get a sense, and we say this every year. I said it last year. This is a really good camp. Things feel good. This feels even better, and I think part of that is the reinforcements they have, not only in James Campen, the offensive line coach, Ben McAdoo, who's been right there with the walkie-talkie, very active with the quarterbacks. You also have Steve Wilks back with the corners, and I want to talk about that with you. This cornerback room is really good, Billy, as you know. It feels like Matt has a little more, I guess, reason to be the CEO and not feel so compelled to micromanage every portion of the practice. And there's less mistakes. There's less emphasis on running around the field after mistakes. It's been more efficient. To me, it's felt like a better practice setup. And like I said, there's fewer mistakes. That's probably a byproduct of having better players too.
Yeah, and I do wonder about the mistakes, and we'll get to one, you know, that happened today with the celebration, and we'll get it. I don't want to get, like, you know, 30 minutes on it, but we'll just kind of touch on to it in a second. But I do wonder, like, a lot of the mistakes, like the – and I think Bill O'Brien and a few other, like, New England coaches, they've done this in the past where they make players, like, if you fumble it or if you, you know, drop a pass, you have to go run a lap or something. Like, how much – like, I just feel like that wastes a lot of time. Like, what – I mean, there has to be, like, other, you know, methods of punishing a player that don't involve wasting practice time by, you know, doing all this other, like, nonsensical stuff, like running laps or doing sprints. And I'm not trying to diminish those. It's definitely good for your conditioning, especially in that heat. But I'm sure coaches with only 90 minutes of time would rather spend their time more efficiently on football only.
Your words absolutely resonate with me on this. And what I do, Billy, and you do the same thing, I know, I trust but verify my own sort of instincts on this stuff. So I have what I believe to be a somewhat of a trained eye on this stuff, and I know you do too. I damn well know you do. And when I go to camp, and I've been doing this for a long time, you can get a sense of, is this necessary in terms of, you know, repercussions from a punishment, you know, or a bad penalty or a false start, or even firing JT Ibe on the spot last year for the hit on Keith Kirkwood. I had people walking around, even some from the organization, like, this is a little extreme to cut somebody on the spot. But let's focus on what's going on right now. Obviously today, and let's just quickly frame this with a little setup from last year. If you're not aware, and I think everybody on the planet who follows the Panthers is, there was a sign that said DBO, do not beat ourselves. And this was on the chain link fence, probably about 150 yards away from the practice session itself. And on probably at least 10 occasions over a couple of days, Matt would blow the whistle on procedure penalties for the offensive line primarily. They would all stop. One at a time, sometimes it'd be individuals, at times it would be the whole offense, would take a brisk jog, a very lazy jog, at least 100, 150 yards across the facility, touch the sign and come back. And to your point, I have tried to make a point to be very fair about Matt Rhule, but that was an awful, awful piece of NFL motivational strategy, I think. You don't, number one, have a lot of time, as you mentioned, to maximize every rep in a very truncated training camp structure right now. You've got an offensive line that needs to gel. You don't need to waste minutes, even seconds, having guys run high school gassers with a sign. It was very symbolic and corny. And of course, right, the sign's not back. We haven't seen a lot of that until today. Now, full disclosure, I was not at practice, and we don't want to spend a half hour on this, but I think it's worth talking about because I did reach out to one former player and an NFC scout and got their opinion on this, people that are unbiased, people that kind of like Matt in a way. And what happened was, and let me get the total context of what we're looking at right, there was a touchdown today during the scrimmage, and it was Hollywood Higgins. And, you know, the story on Hollywood, he's been a longtime teammate of Baker back in Cleveland. They've got great rapport, and they've been connecting quite often today on what's going on there in terms of touchdowns. So this is from Ellis Williams, who was on site today. Baker Mayfield hit Rashard Higgins on a deep post touchdown, which we love that, by the way. Offense was geeked. Higgins rolled out the red carpet in a celebration, but he was flagged for taunting. Matt Rhule stopped the practice, yelled at everyone, and made the offense run. An update to that, and as Ellis says, celebration gate update, Higgins also extended the ball as he walked into the end zone. Matt Rhule did not like that. So it looks like Higgins had room. He sort of walked in casually, extended the hand over the end zone. And a combination of that and the rolling out the carpet, it set Matt off. Now, I wasn't there, but people are tweeting, and Ellis texted me afterwards and was like, yeah, it is what it is. You know, it was pretty volatile from the coach's side. So that, to me, is an absolute stupid thing to do as a player to hold the ball out. I get it. But it's absolutely counterproductive right now in this portion of the camp, in my view, for the head coach to stop everything in the middle of an exciting, electric moment for your new quarterback, your new number three, maybe four receiver, who have been connecting all camp in front of the biggest crowd they've seen at camp. And you totally take the wind out of the sails with that. And you make the offense, grown-ass men, run over it. It's not like Higgins was, you know, doing the Randy Moss on the goalpost. It's not like he lifted the leg up and peed. He wasn't wiping the baby down with a diaper. It wasn't outrageous. It was a red carpet celebration. Making people run is something that it smells and feels like Joe Judge. And you know, Belichick can do what Belichick does because he's got rings. You know, when I had somebody reach out to me earlier, unsolicited, an NFC scout who's been doing this for a long time, here's what he said about, hey, do you make players run? Quote, you got to let that moment ride. Talk to the whole team later tonight as a team meeting. This isn't high school. Got a guy.
Yeah, and I totally agree with that. I think there's certainly a way you should hold your players accountable for those mistakes, because you don't want that to happen on Sundays. Let's be clear. You don't. I mean, you know, a 15-yard penalty after a touchdown, I think, is not the worst thing in the world. But again, you don't want it to happen. But you don't want a situation like we had a couple years ago when Teddy Bridgewater reached a ball out and he got, you know, the ball smacked out of him, and it turned into a huge controversy because they told him not to do that. And I'm sure they did. But at the same time, the last thing we want is, you know, Higgins, you know, on a 60-yard touchdown, slowing down and reaching the ball out, and all of a sudden out of nowhere, DB comes and swipes it away, and it's a touchback for them.
Quickly, Billy, quickly. You know how many times Newton did this during camp? At least a dozen during camp, trying to hit the pylon. He did it against Atlanta. He slam dunked that guy. And it was a great touchdown. Now, it was kind of dicey. I get it. But Ron Rivera at least knew how to understand the moment and maybe have conversations with position coaches and delegate that. To have the head coach come into a middle of a practice and do that, to me, it's not just that I didn't like it, because I wasn't there and I didn't see the visual of it. And I'm trying to be fair here, but you've got people I respect around the league to look at that and say, yeah, you might want to just kind of pull them aside and have that talk. And that can be done in a certain way. But this is Matt's style, for better or worse. He's a Coughlin guy, you know that. And he's trying to work his discipline style in the middle of camp, and we'll see if it works. It's like somebody else told me today, hey, if they win games, we won't be talking about this. But my point to that has been, this gets into the discussion we're going to have in a minute about rotating players and who gets the reps. It's okay to say, well, if we win, it all worked out, it's great. Well, maybe some of what's happening here that we don't see as productive could be leading to a lack of wins. Process does matter. Matt will tell you that. So I'm just curious about what the mindset from his perspective is, but he's not going to give you much on that, and we know that, so we just move on.
Yeah, and, you know, it is what it is. And, you know, I guess, you know, spinning back off that comment, or that tweet at least, and it seems like Mayfield and Higgins have a very nice chemistry that has been, you know, seamless from when they were in Cleveland. And I mean, what have you made so far on Mayfield? Because that seems to be the one, not necessarily the elephant in the room, because that comes off as a little negative, but it just seems like that's what everyone is kind of paying attention to right now.
Billy, I went into this trying to understand Baker Mayfield a little more as a human subject, and then secondarily as a quarterback, because you can look at tape all day long. You can talk to people like Cosell and Bowen and Schofield that we do on a regular basis and get your views confirmed from the tape on that. And I think we all understand what Baker is in terms of the quarterback, and we'll dive into that during the show. As the human element goes, there's an echo chamber, and some of this sort of reflects what Newton went through as well. It's not to say either one of these guys are similar or that they've made similar mistakes or any mistakes, but you get Cowherd and some of these other mainstream guys that continue to churn unnecessarily on a guy like Baker Mayfield, and you start to think, wow, what kind of piece of shit are we getting here? This guy sounds like a real piece of work. what I've seen from Mayfield is something I haven't seen from a quarterback here, Billy, since Newton was rocking and rolling in that 2019 camp, fully recovered from the shoulder before the foot injury. You have a little bit of competitive electricity there. And it's not fake. It's not something that comes unnatural to him. He's always been this way. I understand he's grabbed his crotch before. He was talking shit to Baylor before a game back in college. There's little things. He obviously had an incident in college. It wasn't great. So I understand there's things there. But just watching him at close range here, I don't want to say you can't win with a quarterback who doesn't have a lot of emotion. That's not really it. But if you don't have a lot of emotion and fire, you better damn well have the acumen and the ability to lead by example and to just have that sort of quiet confidence. Sam Darnold doesn't have quiet confidence. Sam Darnold has quiet reluctance. Teddy Bridgewater is just wired a little different. And he's sort of a dink and dunk intermediate guy with good processing, but his deep balls were helium filled and he didn't have the ability to sort of in the crunch time when the shit's on the line here at 4 minutes left, you're down six. There's no confidence from the guys around them that we can roll with this guy. Baker last year did not have a lot of success late in games. And that's why the media ripped him an asshole because obviously there was a labrum issue. As Mark Schofield told us recently, and he told me on the show on Fox Sports, Billy, I think he just had a labrum injury, Mark, at his age. But Mark played quarterback at Wesleyan. And he said, John, I'm telling you, I'm not being a Baker defender, but people don't know how hard it is to operate as a quarterback with even a left labrum. And now that he's healed, here's what I can tell you what I've seen from Baker. When he is in the huddle, there is a cadence and a command to it. So he gets in and out quickly, which is kind of nice because he's been here for a short time. He gets people lined up with efficiency. There have been very few procedure issues. There hasn't been one time I've seen where McAdoo had to blow the whistle and said, all right, let's run it again. No, not there. There haven't been any interruptions. It's been very efficient. When he gets into his drops, he is looking with a sense of purpose to push the ball down the field, but not at all costs. So his progressions to me, you can't get in somebody's head. You can tell his mind works quicker than Sam's. He sees things with more clarity than Darnold does. And yesterday's a great example during 7-on-7. So Sam comes out first with the ones, Billy, and Sam throws four completions in a row. None of them were over 5 yards in the air. That's fine. Whatever. It's run after catch. You've got good people there. Baker comes in with the twos. The first play call was a Y seam shot to the tight end Trimble. And he reads right, goes back left to it. Back shoulder goes off Trimble's fingers. That's 18 yards down the field. Second's an out route to Shy Smith, 7 yards. Third, sort of a scramble drill. Things break down. He scrambles about 15 yards to his right. And he tries to throw about a 50-yard boundary pass to number 19. And it goes out of bounds by about 3 feet. And the last one, it's the same seam shot, just inverse the other side. Y seam to 86. Thompson catches it. Crowd goes nuts. Baker runs up to him, dropping S-bombs. Here we go. Let's go. It's a good vibe when that happens. And that's with the backups. So, Billy, all I can tell you is, and we got much more data here, but that's a small microcosm. I know sometimes we have to take the emotions out of the analysis here, but there's an emotional component to playing this position, and that has been missing from this huddle for a long time. You have not had a sense of confidence and let's go and, okay, let's get our shit together. Let's play with some urgency is the word I always use. Sam is the quintessential example of that. I respect Sam Darnold as a professional, but as a top three pick, what did Greg Cosell tell us? What did Matt Bowen tell us? I don't want to really get into blaming coaching. I want to evaluate the player. And so all the examples about, oh, he hasn't had this and that and the coaching has sucked. Sam is who he is, Billy. And Baker's worst season, which would have been 19, would have been better than probably any season we've had here from a quarterback since 2018. So I'm encouraged by Baker quite a bit because all the little things that Bridgewater could do, Baker can do those things. Baker can push the ball. He's putting balls in places to Higgins on post routes on the money. He hit Robbie Anderson on a post about 3 or 4 days ago. that's a kind of ball I haven't seen in training camp since Newton was healthy. So it's very encouraging. I don't want people to get overwhelmed by my analysis here, because things can also go south when you start facing a pass rush, a blitz, coverage schemes. But he's also been through all that too. Not saying he's perfect, but he's by far the best thrower of the football they've had in quite some time here.
Yeah, and I guess that's encouraging to hear. And, you know, following up on that, I don't know what the plan is as far as when they'll name a starter. I think that I read something that after the Patriots, like, joint practices and preseason game, they want to name a starter.
Let me just give you a quick note on that. So today, Matt Rhule spoke with the media on this. And let me pull up my notes to make sure that I'm giving you what is accurate. It sounds like Matt Rhule is going to make decisions on starters after the Patriots game on the 19th. So that's where they stand right now. Now that could change. And we'll follow up to make sure that that's something that does hold true moving forward. But as of right now, it sounds like, let me read you the quote as well. This is from Ellis Williams, who actually documented. Matt Rhule said he does not anticipate, and that's a key, you know, disclaimer, he does not anticipate making a decision about who will the starters be at any position until after the Pats preseason game. That's in 13 days.
Okay. Well, yeah, I mean, I guess that makes
things can change, so.
All right, yeah, so we'll look forward to that. And I guess my question now for you, and just I want to get your thoughts on, well, I personally have some thoughts myself. I think they're wasting everyone's time by letting it drag on this much, but I don't get why you need the intent of a competition when things have just gone so poorly for the guy who you gave up on after a year, as you should. I mean, if you're making this move to acquire Mayfield, and you're doing it with the intention that Darnold wasn't good enough, and he wasn't, and he hasn't been throughout his NFL career. So why are we continuing to kind of push, you know, valuable reps with him? And I think that's a question that I have, and I don't want to kind of keep piling on them, but it just seems like
I don't think you're piling on. I think it's a fair question. I think it needs to be asked. Not enough people are doing it.
It just seems easily avoidable, I guess.
Yeah, it is. And again, you hear very few people from around the league that we sort of network with and talk to that are around coaching, scouting, former player circles that understand it as well. This is from an NFC scout. Quote, none of it makes sense to me. You trade for that guy, meaning Baker, and that means you don't believe in Sam. So why still give Sam reps with the ones? Recipe for disaster, in my opinion. He also mentions the fact that these reps are extremely valuable. Baker needs to get his timing down now, not during the season. And he also says he thinks Matt Corral could start right now for some teams, but he thinks it'll be good for him to sit for a year. But the fact is, Billy, there's two things going on here. Number one, you do have these two quarterbacks that are not equal in terms of prior tape or current acumen, by the way, getting the equal number of reps. Number two, you're affecting Matt Corral's workload with this, because what you would ideally want to do here is have, you know, and PJ's in the mix too, but have, you know, about a 50-25-15 split, something like that. The math was wrong there, but you get it. Corral is basically working maybe a couple of throws here or there in 7-on-7, 11-on-11s, and that's about it. And it's always with, you know, the reserves. He hasn't had time with the ones, and maybe he doesn't need that right now. But if Sam is not your future and Matt is, I would imagine the way I would look at this, and most people do, is Baker, name him the starter yesterday. Don't play this game where you're trying to manufacture some type of competitive juice. They don't need that. It's not going to help Sam any. Baker sees right through it. The team sees right through it. And they're not increasing the trade value by doing this. So whatever the end game is, that's my only question, Billy. I don't mind a coach trying unconventional things. I mean, hell, look at McVay. He never plays his guys in the preseason. Fair enough. They win, though. So when you've got 2 5-win seasons and you continue these methods, it's fair game. Right. I don't understand what the end game here is in doing this. If they feel maybe Baker gets hurt and Sam needs to be up to speed, but he's been in OTAs. Baker's late to the party. It makes no sense to me. I don't know if Matt has something personal against Baker and this wasn't his call, but Matt's still calling the shots. We can talk all day long, Billy, about bringing McAdoo, Campen. Oh, they finally did it. They built in the staff that he needed. Now Matt Rhule can go be a winner. Matt Rhule still calls the shots. So just understand, you know, we're not quite there yet.
Well, I want to switch to defense now. You know, defensively, we have mentioned that they are light in some areas, particularly at pass rusher, or at the defensive pass rusher, defensive end pass rusher, excuse me. Carlos Dunlap was a guy they had interest in, but he decided to sign with the Chiefs. You know, the options available are, you know, they're not great. I mean, Jason Pierre-Paul, Eric Flowers, Everson Griffin. Mm-hmm. I mean, these are some okay, like, pass rushers who could provide, you know, some snaps for you.
Yeah.
But today, Marquise Haynes, unfortunately, was injured, and we don't know how the severity of it. It sounded like it's going to be an injury that can keep him out for at least, you know, the next few weeks. I don't know. I wasn't there. I don't know what the full prognosis is. But to me, I want to get your perspective, first of all, on the non-Brian Burns defensive ends. And do you think that this injury will kind of accelerate the process into signing a replacement at that position?
I think it will. I think we all understand, and again, I have no sourcing on this item. I when I have a source, I'll tell you, but on this one, this is just spitballing ideas and using context clues. They did have some interest in Carlos Dunlap. I was excited about that just for the fact that he fit the physical profile I think they need on that other side to both get after the quarterback but also have some more size opposite Burns, Billy, to be able to hold up in the run game. I thought that could have really done some good things for them. And he had some great tape the last six games last year. It came on strong. That ship has sailed. You mentioned Jason Pierre-Paul. Obviously, there's size there and experience. Maybe that's the obvious fit. Trey Flowers, you've got Carl Nassib is still available from the Raiders. It's not a great list. I mean, somebody mentioned D Ford, and D Ford's played in 15 games in 3 years. So I wouldn't do that. I do think they're going to look at every option, because if you look at it now, and Billy, I want to just mention this to you as well. When you watch this team and you look at the chart of, you know, height, weight, all that good stuff, and then you see them on the field, they're a little bit light, and you know that on the edge, but they're not exactly built for success at nose tackle either. Sticking to the edge, I think, you know, your options now in-house, you know, why GM is going to be moving in and out of three technique on passing downs and then edge on base and nickel. So that'll happen. Haynes is not a run setting, edge setting type of guy. He really is sort of undersized, 6'2", maybe 230-ish. So it's a big time loss situationally if he's gone for a long time, because he can give you 5-6 sacks in a rotational spot. Defensive end Austin Larkin. I mean, this is the rest of the group here. Daryl Johnston, Drew Jordan, Amari Barno, who is not big enough right now to hold up full time. He's going to need a lot of time to get ready for that. He's fast as shit, but he's not big enough. And then, you know, your rest of your group there, you're not looking at a lot of guys. Like, you know, Frank Heron, it's a thin group. So, yeah, I think it would be to their benefit with Brian Burns honestly doing a good job, if not great job, in terms of being an impact edge rusher every week, or most weeks at least. But we all know what happened at the end of last season and the end of the season before. Those ends are for the taking in the run game, and they're built for speed. They're built for having a lead. That's what those first three wins were about last year. But you get on top of Carolina early, and you force them to play, not only catch up on offense. I think they might be able to do that this year if Sam's not the quarterback, which I hope he isn't. On defense, though, they're still in a susceptible spot, I think, where if you end up in a tight game late with a Dallas or a Cleveland or a game where they're up by four and there's 8 minutes left, you might not get the ball back. their red zone defense was very bad last year, as you know, and their run defense as a whole was not up to standards for a defense that people keep saying is the number two defense in the NFL. That's a very elementary way of looking at their rankings. You have to kind of, as you know, dig deep. And those are problem areas that teams will exploit. And this schedule in particular, Billy, does have teams that prefer to have a power run element to them to complement the passing game. So there's a challenge there. I think they got to look into the free agent market and add somebody. I thought that before Haynes got hurt. And they also got to get another nose tackle. We can talk about that too, but Bravion Roy is the only guy. And they've got some three technique guys. They've got Derek Brown, who's a bit of a tweener. They brought in Danny Shelton for a visit. I know Danny hasn't seen his best years lately, but I think it might be a good idea to add one more big defensive tackle because you lost to Quan Jones. Obviously, Morgan Fox is less of a nose. He's more of a three technique. He's gone. And Matt Ioannidis is a bigger version of Morgan Fox. But still, it's kind of a light group up front. It's concerning.
So what have you seen from them, like, in particular? Has there been anyone who's, like, kind of stood out outside of, obviously, Burns?
No, I mean, not really. I mean, this is kind of the portion of the camp where you start to see those things because you can now get a sense and a gauge of, okay, wow, players are starting to line up in 11 and 11s and things are happening. I think you're seeing a lot of playing time by, obviously, the usual guys, Derek Brown. Your Tergros Matos, the same type of thing we're seeing from Phil Snow, rotational. Playing a lot of snaps, you're playing him in different spots, okay? So you'll see him a lot of times lined up at edge. You'll also see him inside at three technique, and he's very good there in passing downs. Frankie Louvu is having a very good camp. I can tell you this, too, that the way they have it structured in terms of, like, the position group sort of drills, and I thought this was interesting because it gives you sort of an understanding of what they truly consider these guys to be position-wise. So you had Frankie Louvu working with the linebacker group and the linebacker coach in drills all week. So before practice kicks off, that's where you see Frankie Louvu. He's with the defense. He's with the linebacker group with Al Holcomb and that gang. On the defensive line group, let me give you the names. Haynes, Nixon, Burns, Brown, Gross Matos, Roy, Larkin, Jordan, Barno, Heron, and Hoskins. So they're working Louvu with linebackers. They're not working Burns in that department. I would imagine that's because you're looking for Louvu to be that type of backer in this system. And we've seen this from teams like Seattle where you have a Leo position end versus the other side. I'm thinking they're going to look for Louvu to continue to be a guy that not only rushes the passer, but drops in coverage and tries to get his hand on the ball. And he had a great interception this week. I'm not concerned that Louvu can't be good. I think what happens here is he was highly efficient in limited reps. You start increasing those reps, I don't know what you're going to get. He could have 10, 12, 15 sacks. I don't know. Could explode. He's a very physical, alert player, and he has stood out during this camp. So I'm happy to see Frankie getting a lot of playing time at that opposite edge position, linebacker position, however you want to frame it. And I think at the edge position, he will get most of the reps. Now with Haynes out, he's pretty much your full-time guy.
For sure. And you did speak earlier about the cornerback room, the secondary, and how Steve Wilks has obviously returned. He seems to be much more of a detailed. And I think, you know, him working in the NFL in the past, particularly with this organization, it gives him a very good foundation of how to relate to NFL players. So what have you seen from that group? Because to me, I see a couple guys that are obviously solidified in J.C. Horn. I know he's been kind of working his way back. And Dante Jackson, who just got rewarded a big deal this offseason. But outside of that, I see question marks.
Okay, let me give you my analysis on that. I probably disagree with you on that, but maybe you can help me understand if I miss something. The corner group, to me, you don't have Stephon Gilmore, so that's, you know, obviously a loss, and he was very good last year. I like the fact, personally, and again, this is just me, that, first of all, C.J. Henderson, who we both understood had some issues there during his time in Jacksonville, and I think one of the issues you had talked about is his level of desire to play the game of football. Steve Wilks is not always with the corners. It's mostly Evan Cooper, but Steve sort of oversees both groups. He's with the safeties. But they, in the meeting rooms, obviously, there's been some impact. CJ looks more involved, happier, more in tune. He's had a camp here to get through this, and I thought he's looked very good so far within that training camp structure. I really do. The room itself, I think when you have Dante Jackson, who I think we both agree is a good corner. I don't think he's great, but I think he's a very good corner. When you've got Henderson, who looks better, has the number one draft pedigree, and we would imagine that can start improving now, but got to see it. J.C. Horn, they're working back in easily and slowly, and I think he'll be fine by week one. He's so good. He can play slot. He can play outside. He was ready from day one, and he will be like having a new rookie all over again, but one that's got a veteran's mind. I like Miles Hartsfield. I liked him on tape last year. I thought he showed a lot of toughness in some of these games, late games that they were trying to battle with, like Tampa, playing the slot, had some great coverage reps, and he also can blitz off the edge. So I think that might be your full-time nickel or part-time with Horn. They'll probably bat them back and forth. Keith Taylor, been a little hurt, but we love his size, I think. And then Stanley Thomas Oliver is a good special teams player. So to me, you know, I mentioned earlier in the week with Steve Wilks back in the building, I think this is one of the better groups they've had collectively from top to bottom in terms of corners. Now, you're not so sure maybe about that, and I want to know why, because I'm usually second-guessing myself on some of this stuff by nature. Tell me what you're seeing.
Well, it's not necessarily what I'm seeing, and I wish I was there. And I think I appreciate your perspective because you are there. And I will obviously get a better look once the preseason games and the actual games begin. But to me, obviously you had one of the best corners in the NFL in Gilmore. J.C. Horn was a, you know, for however short he played, he looked like he belonged and looked like he belonged in a much better way as far as like just his talent. And in Dante Jackson, I think everyone knows what he is, even if you have questions about some of his, some questions about just his overall game, which is totally fair. But to me, I after that, I just see a lot of question marks. I'm not saying these are bad players at all. I don't know that. But like the likes of Hartsfield and Keith Taylor, again, I liked Keith Taylor when he did play. I remember it was that game against Minnesota where he had like three or four pass breakups. He looked really good. So I just have a lot more questions about if these guys are going to be NFL level players. And by that, I mean like just league average. And I think that's a fair barometer for NFL corner to reach. No one is going to reach the likes of Jalen Ramsey. I mean, that's just not possible. So becoming a league average starter, I think would be constitute a pretty good room. I just haven't seen it with these guys. That's all. Like the likes of Hartsfield, like he had moments, but there were a lot more other moments that film last year where he struggled. He wasn't in position. I think about the Patriots game in the red zone where he didn't really match well with Hunter Henry and Mac had a pretty decent window to throw it.
Yeah.
So I just kind of question the talent level in the group, not necessarily if what you're seeing is, you know, much better than, you know, I'll take your word for it. And I can't wait to see what these guys do once, you know, the preseason does begin.
Hey, but like Hartsfield is a guy that you mentioned, and there were some games that were up and down for him for certain. I totally agree. I think his snap count in terms of coverage was fairly consistent from about that Miami game on, and the New England game was not his shining moment. He did not have some good moments there. But in terms of coverage, there were some games that I thought were good, and I love the fact that the coverage has improved in camp a little bit. Now it's camp. He's a very good tackler in that slot role. So if you need somebody to come in and fill, and that's pretty critical for what they want to do, he's 5'11", 211. I don't know if he'll be much of a player for this defense because if they only have three that are healthy, Horn will probably play a lot of snaps at slot. But he's been better at camp, and I thought there were some games last year where he flashed a little bit, especially in that Tampa game at the end of the year. And the Buffalo game, not so shabby either. And with Taylor, who knows? We'll see. The size is good. But those are bottom-of-the-line guys, and I think the big three they have, if they stay healthy together, it's the Wilkes factor, too, with me. I just think that they have an opportunity now to be working under one of the best DB coaches that we've seen around here in a long time. It's a strength point, I think, versus maybe some other spots on this roster, like opposite edge, Linebacker seems a little bit dicey to me right now. But yeah, I got really no problem. And the safety group to me, we can talk about the two. I think it's a pretty good unit.
Yeah, for sure. And I agree with you that the coaching should elevate the greater sum of the parts. So I never wanted to come off and say that this is a group that necessarily isn't on the same level as the other guys. I just
no, but I'm glad you're here. I'm glad you're here though, because like I remember I see things sometimes in camp and then I get a little excited, and then we got to remember some of the tape from last year, and you do bring some good points about certain players. I think Hartsfield's a very niche type of guy, but you're right, he's not going to light the world up. He said they're going to exploit him at times. You got to be ready for that. Hopefully there's a defensive structure that doesn't require guys other than the first three we mentioned to be playing a lot of snaps, but you know, it's the NFL, got to be ready.
And let's close out here with linebackers. Shaq Thompson has been, I believe, on the PUP list.
Correct yes, me if I'm that's wrong. Correct. He has not practiced, and yeah, you're right on that.
So with that said, this unit, again, there are some question marks that I have as far as just the players and, you know, how they're performing. I mean, Damian Wilson, I think he's a solid NFL linebacker. He's not going to – nothing flashy about his game at all. I think he just knows where to be in the right spots. But, you know, last time I checked, there was some legal situation surrounding him. Mm-hmm. So I don't know where that stands. But, again, solid NFL player, no issues. Similar to – Denzel Perryman, who they signed last year. And then we have the rookie, Brandon Smith. But for you, what have you seen from this group? Because you just mentioned that you do have some questions about it.
Well, I do. I mean, I think anytime you come into a new camp, Billy, ever since the Luke Kuechly, Thomas Davis days departed us, there has been always a certain level of reluctancy to get excited about this group. Now, Shaq last year, I thought, had a good season. I really do. I think, you know, putting himself out there as a team leader, it wasn't easy because they had what I thought at the time and still believe was a sort of a one-trick pony, but very good at that one trick, Denzel Perryman, at a situation where he ended up, you know, right or wrong, collecting a lot of tackles in a Las Vegas team. And made the Pro Bowl, I believe. And that's, you know, Pro Bowl is what it is. But still, you could have used some of that down the stretch in the run game. I liked him a lot for what they brought him in for, and they cut him during training camp. They traded him, I'm sorry. Right now, though, getting back to that point, Corey Littleton's getting most of the reps with the ones along with Wilson. And they both look, you know, fine. Again, in the run game, what you do see at times early on in these blocking moments in the scheme is primarily zone at this point from what I can tell, but there's some gap elements to it as well when they mix it up. The edges are where they're trying to hit with McCaffrey, and you try to go a little wide and hit that cut, and Moten has been obliterating everybody throughout that. And what happens there is you give yourself an opportunity to get guys like Corbett or Bozeman to that second level, and I'm not seeing anything terrible from Littleton, or especially Wilson for that matter, in terms of being able to get off the blocks. Littleton has been in there the most, I think. You also see this rookie that you mentioned, Brandon Smith, number 40. He has had some reps with the ones, mostly with the twos. And when he's been in there with the ones, he's been with Littleton. They're running mostly nickel, Billy, so you don't see a lot of, you know, 43-34 type of stuff here, as defined by, you know, the old school type of terminology. It's basically, you know, two backers and then five DBs. So a lot of Brandon Smith. You see the athleticism there. Obviously, when he's on the field, he looks like an athlete. He is an athlete. The other linebackers you have Tolson, obviously Graham Mobley. You have Julian Stanford, Kamal Martin. You can count LeVue in that mix if you want to consider him a linebacker. So, again, it's a room that in this day and age and in this division, you don't need like four or five, you know, stout backers to be able to get in there and play stack and stop the run. I think when Shaq comes back, Littleton would be the obvious guy to have with him there, because with Damian Wilson, let's face it, he's got questions about his legal situation. You know, this came up recently in a press conference. I think Joe Person brought it up. But the report from the Dallas Morning News initially mentioned that Wilson showed up to his ex-girlfriend's place drunk and started, you know, breaking stuff and threatening to kill her. That's a report, again, from the Dallas Morning News, not me. And then, you know, he has not really had a chance to address this until this week. And his comment on it, you know, I can't say much about legal issues. No comment. And that's where he left it. So obviously we don't know. I would imagine, you know, there's a good chance he might miss a day or two, a practice or a game or two for this. This is not a pretty situation. So you got to start planning ahead for that. Now, I don't think they're going shopping for veteran linebackers at this point. But I think when Shaq comes back, when he's right, they'll be okay. They'll be fine. They're just thin, Billy. They're thin, and they're young behind what they have at the veteran spots. So I'm always concerned about linebacker. I have been since Luke and Thomas left. That's just that's never going to stop for me because Shaq is not quite at their level, although he is good. And I think you got to be careful. Once some guys start dropping and you get some injuries here, that's when it gets problematic.
No, I totally understand where you're coming from. But that makes sense that the injuries can are just kind of holding things back a little bit. But, John, this has been a really informative discussion. Anything else you want to say to the audience, as I'm just trying to get acclimated myself, and hopefully by next week when I actually watch the preseason games, I'll provide some much more detailed analysis on my observations.
No, I first of all, glad you're back. It's been too long. I want to, of course, as we come to you here on a Saturday, just mentioning that we had a chance to watch Sam Mills' widow give a very compelling induction speech in Canton at the Pro Football Hall of Fame. And her quote was, "Keep pounding everyone. That's what Sam would want you to do." And that's from Melanie Mills, the widow of Sam Mills. And I think it was a great day. We get so bogged down with training camp fodder. And I know, you know, I'm one of several people that cover that team who really sort of turbo through the nuances of practice. And you can get really bogged down with it. It's information overload, but it was nice to sort of take a break, have a little lunch, sit down and watch a great Hall of Fame enshrinement. And my favorite player of all time for this organization, Sam Mills, the late, great Sam Mills, with a bust in Canton. Hell yeah, man. That's good shit. So I know that wasn't eloquent, but it certainly made my day. As far as the football side goes, a quick few updates. Joe Person is reporting that, going back to what Scott Fitterer said, that the team was looking to possibly bring in edge rushers. He mentioned Jason Pierre-Paul is one of many. People have been asking about Robert Quinn. Would they make a play for Robert? That would probably cost you a second-round pick. I say don't do it because he's too up and down. Just going through my notes here and making sure I'm not missing anything important. There will be practice again coming up here. They're off tomorrow. They practice again on Monday morning. And they will practice Monday, Tuesday, I believe Wednesday. I'll double check. I know Thursday's Fan Fest. And then we turn right back around. It's game week. You got Ron Rivera's Commanders with John Matsko and company waiting to test out this first line of defense here. And we'll see about the quarterback. I think the big thing that we didn't touch on, and I'd like to take a minute here just before we go and get your take on it. When I talk with people that we usually network with, Billy, around the league, because we like to get a variety of opinions, you know, our own is enough, but we also want to make sure that, you know, like Cosell, guys like that, and even scouts around the league, I asked him about this Akeem Okwunu situation. So if you're not aware, and let me get you up to speed, Billy, and fans are aware what's going on. Okwunu is not playing with the ones at left tackle, okay? And that, I guess it's not unusual for rookies, I understand it, even though this team has been waiting for over a decade for a bona fide left tackle. They're doing high fives in the draft room because they've got their guy, it fell in their lap, they gave up nothing. So Christensen has been running with the ones, almost primarily at left tackle. Okwunu is running at the ones in some limited series, but not very often. That bothers me. It may not be a big deal. It may be fine. Matt Rhule came out last week, Billy, and said to the media that Akeem Okwunu is not given anything right now. He has to earn his starting role. I don't know where that came from. I don't know why he had to say that publicly, but he did. Christensen, to me, has looked very good at left tackle. He's had some good reps against Brian Burns in camp. My issue with this is, number one, they're not giving any reps to Ekwonu at guard right now. None. Zero. He's exclusively the second left tackle. So, Christensen, you had your opportunity last year in a season that was very much lost to start him and do the evaluation on him then, at least on the first leg of things. You wasted that opportunity. Now you're having to use these reps to evaluate Christensen as your potential left tackle, and at the expense of a rookie who was drafted very early in the draft for a tackle, is basically running with the twos. And we're 35 days away from opening day. The whole idea here, Billy, was to get your five and set it. And I don't like this. I may not see it for what it is yet, but I've tried. Yesterday, also, one more footnote. Pat Elflein was starting at center. No injury to Bozeman. Now, I know Pat's been a center before. He ran with the ones the entire practice until the end, and then they put Bozeman in red zone. Now, Bozeman was back at first team today. But I don't understand that you draft Ekwonu. I'm okay if you draft him top 10, and he's a left tackle, but he moves to guard. Some people hate that. I'm like, fuck it. Look, Quentin Nelson's a great left guard that was taken early. You got a left guard that can dominate. Have a left guard that can dominate. He's a left tackle, though, and he's your rookie, and he's your draft pick. And Christensen was, what, third round? And the arms were short, and I just – this coach drives me nuts sometimes because it's not like these guys are splitting reps. Christensen's getting the majority, and he's not blowing people away. He looks fine. He looks pretty good at times. But I would like to see Ekwonu in the starting five. I don't want to see him riding the bench or doing the Moten swing tackle thing from 2018. He's too good for that. Mm-hmm. So that to me seems like something that needs to be monitored as we go along. And the feedback I got again from a couple of scouts around the league is just head scratching because these guys scouted Ekwonu just nonstop. And they just saw some things in the pass set technique that needed to be worked on a little bit. And we both knew that it would need to take some time, but he had OTAs and now he's had, you know, full week and a half of camp. And now you got to go into your season one game, week one game without any knowledge of who your starting five are going to be. Once again, this is from an NFC scout quote. Yeah, I think Ekwonu not in the lineup is more telling than the quarterback situation. The Panthers wanted him in the worst way. We know how it's been in the past. Jacking him around and not letting him gel with the starters is insanity. That's from a scout from an NFC team. Doesn't mean it's his gospel, but I know what I'm seeing, and I know it doesn't feel right.
And well, what happened after OTA? Something about the Matt Rhule calling out Ekwonu's conditioning?
That I don't recall. Now, I know he called out a number of people on conditioning. I have to go back and look, but I know he very clearly – I don't want to say he called him out here in Spartanburg, but here's what he said back on August 4th, and this is from NFL.com. To me, Icky's a rookie. He's got to earn everything he gets. He's got a long way to go. He's done some things very well naturally. He's unbelievably powerful, talented, but there's a lot to this game. There's a lot of nuances and techniques and all those things. He's got a long way to go. He'll get there, but every day he's got to work. And that's, you know, that resonates zero with me, by the way. He's a dominant left tackle who needs a little work in the pass sets, and you don't get that work sitting on the bench or riding with the twos. So when you're riding with the twos, you're facing less potent edge guys in the. First of all, that's not helping your development. If they truly think Brady can be a left tackle, what has changed? Is that a Campen thing? Did he put that in Rhule's head and say, you've got a guy here that can be a great left tackle, roll in this direction? All I know is if this continues and Ekwonu does not start getting one reps with the left tackle side, and again, I think moving him to guard is fine. He's done that, but do something other than just have Christensen at left tackle, then who's your left guard?
Yeah.
Good question there.
That's all going to be from us today. We will be back next week. And more importantly, next week is game week. So we'll have analysis before and after the game. And certainly after the game, we're going to be really touching on some of the position battles and just the overall performance of the players. So Thank you again, everyone, and we'll catch you next time.
Whether you're a world-class athlete or a podcaster like me, we all understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. That's why I'm excited that Unified Healing is sponsoring podcasts on the Blue Wire Network. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement System, or EE System. If you haven't heard of the EE System yet, then you'll want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. Wherever you are across the globe, access to a center is easy and affordable. Interested in experiencing the EE System technology for yourself? Go to unifiedhealing.com/bluewire to learn more and find a center near you. That's Unified, UNIFYD, healing.com/bluewire. No material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including EE system.